From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kavitha George. A COVID-19 mystery in Valdez. A Peter Pan Seafoods worker tested positive for the virus even though he had been in state for a month, completed a two-week quarantine, and not left the city. Officials aren't sure how he got it. Also, Alaska's fishing charters are suffering this summer as travel restrictions and pandemic worry put a damper on tourism. And finally, environmentalists in Bristol Bay are concerned the Trump administration is taking advantage of the pandemic to advance projects like Pebble Mine. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
A seafood worker in Valdez has tested positive for COVID-19, but state health officials say they aren't sure how the man who works for Peter Pan Seafoods contracted the virus because he has been in state for a month, went through quarantine, and has not left the city since he arrived. During a video announcement from the city, Valdez doctor Angela Alfaro said the company followed its safety plan.
This was a case where everything was done right. The employer, the individual, and the screening mechanisms were all in place. Any one of us could have been Valdez's first case, so please remember this and show compassion.
The man was asymptomatic when he arrived and doesn't have any symptoms now. State epidemiologist Luisa Castrodale said he was tested on Wednesday, May 20th, as part of a screening effort for workers.
It's not clear the source of the infection, whether this was something that was picked up locally since the person had been there for a month.
She said it's possible that the test picked up, quote, residual virus from an infection he had in the past. According to a city media release, the initial contact investigation indicates that the man has stayed on the Peter Pan Seafoods campus since he got to Valdez, so they consider the risk to the community to be relatively low. Peter Pan Seafoods Director of Administration Dale Schiffler said the man was living in private quarters, but they have since moved him into quarantine and have sanitized his living area and the places he worked.
Anyone the employee has been in contact with has also gone into quarantine, and the employee's living areas and working areas have been sanitized. We are anticipating retesting the employee and anyone he's been in contact with as soon as possible.
So far, 8 non-resident seafood workers have tested positive for COVID-19 in Alaska, including a Trident Seafoods worker in Dillingham and an Ocean Beauty cannery worker in Cordova.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Alaska's charter fishing businesses are suffering this summer, with prolonged travel restrictions severely impacting tourism to the state. Andy Mesereau guides fishing charters out of Seward with his business Gray Light Sport Fishing. He also sits on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, where he's proposed loosening bag limit restrictions to entice more Alaska residents to buy fishing charters. As Mesereau told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove, that's one idea that could complement other help for charter fishermen struggling to survive.
Typically, it's an exciting time. You know, all the boats are getting ready to go and everyone's down in the boat harbor, and that's sort of the focal point of attention. And this year, it's just not like that. It's pretty crazy, really. We're used to hearing the tour boats going by and fishing boats going out, and it's just nothing.
So what kind of fishing do you do? Like this time of year, what would you normally be doing?
And typically, I fish for king salmon at this time of year, but I do have a halibut trip scheduled, my first one of the year for this year next week, which is a local family from Wasilla that's going to come down and get on my boat. That's all we're really getting now is local fishermen, and there just aren't that many of them for the number of boats that there are. So, you know, I think I have, 23 trips on the books left from 57 that I had February 1st, and almost all of them are local residents.
So, yeah, tell me a little bit more about that. I mean, without any out-of-state visitors, really, how bad has business been so far this summer?
I never thought I would see the day after 25 years of being in business and being a well-known guide here where I just didn't have any charters on my calendar. That's just never been one of the things that I worry about. And of course, like any small business owner, I worry about a lot of things, but I never thought that I would see the day when you know, half my charters would evaporate in the course of 6 weeks, but that's exactly what happened.
And I mean, we've heard about folks having to sort of pay back deposits and things like that. Are you in that kind of situation too?
No, you know, fortunately, I'm not. I've been doing it for a long time, and I don't take deposits. I just take a credit card to hold it, just because I've always been afraid of something like this happening, where you'd have to refund a bunch of deposits that you already spent. A charter operator that's taken deposits for the last, you know, 12 months to book the following year, and then a lot of them use some of that money as working capital, especially, you know, towards the beginning of the season, and then all of a sudden at the beginning of the season, their trips were canceled and they're forced to give this money back. And there are several that I've talked to that just haven't received any sort of a loan from the government yet. And they have given back all the money they can for deposits. And, you know, one guy that I talked to, you know, his parents told him that he should look into bankruptcy. And then he reminded his parents that they were the holder of the note for his business. And so he would have to not pay them back. You know, it's a family business and the parents are still counting on the business to earn money so that the son can pay the parents for the business that he bought. And I mean, nobody wins if he declares bankruptcy. And a lot of these folks just haven't received any money yet, and they're out of money, and the debt's piling up at the beginning of the season. So you can see how it could just be a really difficult situation at the moment for a lot of guys.
That was Andy Mesereau of Greylight Sport Fishing talking to Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Environmentalists say the Trump administration is taking advantage of the pandemic to advance developments like the Pebble Mine and the Willow Project on the North Slope while everyone is distracted. The government has modified some of its public processes to allow for social distancing, and one spokeswoman says there are unexpected upsides. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Cyanide is not part of the Pebble Mine plan, not as it's described in the permit application. The developers have scaled down the project to improve their chances of getting through the environmental review, and they say they won't need cyanide to leach extra gold out of the rock they excavate. But here's a vice president of Pebble's parent company talking to potential investors in Toronto in late February.
Because for whatever reason, cyanide has a bad reputation in the environmental community. And so we have foregone about 12% of our gold recovery because we don't have a secondary gold recovery circuit. That's not necessarily gold lost. We hope it's gold deferred because we at a subsequent date will get a permit to add a secondary gold recovery circuit.
When Pebble opponent Lindsay Bloom saw this video, it seemed like proof of what fishermen and environmental groups have been warning, that Pebble is just saying what it has to say to get a permit, but ultimately expects to build a more damaging operation. Bloom thought the video would make headlines. She sent a transcript to multiple news outlets more than a week ago. And then, crickets.
I haven't been hearing anything back from reporters. You're the first one I've talked to. I think that, I don't know, the airwaves are so crowded right now with so much going on in the world.
Environmentalists say Pebble is one of a constellation of development proposals and anti-conservation policies that are slipping past the press and the public these days when no one has time to focus on them. Nicole Whittington-Evans of Defenders of Wildlife lists a few.
The very large proposed Willow development project in
hunting
the Western Arctic
and trapping in national parks
would allow brown bear baiting on the refuge, exempting the Tongass National Forest from the roadless rule
to follow a lease sale for the Arctic Refuge coastal plain.
One point of controversy on her list is the way the Bureau of Land Management hosted public meetings last month on the Willow development proposed for the National Petroleum Reserve near the village of Nuiqsut. Rather than hold in-person meetings in a series of communities, the BLM had 8 Zoom sessions.
And it's our pleasure to bring this public meeting to you wherever you are tonight. So thank you for joining us as we continue to expand.
Whittington Evans says the format shifts power to the government. She said one man's microphone was muted as he was providing his opinion. She acknowledges he was swearing, and if it was an in-person meeting, he probably would have been asked to leave.
But there's no muting. You know, you can't just like hold your hand over somebody's face in a public hearing.
BLM spokeswoman Leslie Ellis-Waters says the agency had a responsibility to keep the session suitable. She says Zoom can't replicate an actual meeting, but it has some big advantages when it comes to discussing Arctic projects.
I think it was our very first meeting. We had participation from Southeast, which had never been done at an in-person meeting before. So we were getting perspectives from people that we traditionally have not heard from before.
The 8 Zoom sessions on Willow drew about 400 unique views, plus another 2,000 views on Facebook Live, Ellis-Waters says. That suggests that far more people tuned in than attended the original set of community meetings that took place pre-pandemic. During the sessions, a lot of Willow opponents said meeting by Zoom or meeting at all during a pandemic is unfair. Project supporters, on the other hand, described it as a brilliant way to do public engagement. As for Pebble, spokesman Mike Heatwell declined to be interviewed, but he said in an email that Pebble has no current plans to use cyanide. He also points out that the public input period on the mine ended last year. Now, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is working with its cooperating agencies on the final phases before it decides on issuing permits. One of those cooperating agencies is the Chuhyang Tribe of Dillingham. The tribe's administrator is Courtney Carty.
All of our tribal focus right now is become COVID and maintaining the health and safety of our people here in Bristol Bay.
Thousands are flooding into the area to work in the fishery. Carty says she doesn't have time to keep up with the Pebble documents or attend the biweekly meetings of cooperating agencies.
We're really disenfranchised at this point in time to be able to focus on something as important as the Pebble permitting process that we've dedicated over a decade to have to come to decision essentially over a summer in the midst of a global pandemic is unfathomable.
The executive of Pebble's parent company told investors they expect to have a federal permit in hand by August. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Rasha McChesney from KTOO in Juneau. We also heard from Casey Grove and Liz Ruskin from Alaska Public Media. A big thank you to all the listeners of the Alaska Fisheries Report and to all the radio stations that air our program. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.